This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for joining me once again. This is J. Lewis Mills. You are now on the level with J. Lewis Mills. And we had a really good week, but I do want to just say really quickly, I received a lot of messages through Facebook, through Twitter, as well as Instagram about my last week's show. People were thanking me for having the conversation with Beth that I had. And in my show last week, I had said that we were going to do a part two because there was some information that we did not get to. And guess what? Today is round two, part two, whatever two you want to use. This is going to be the second part of our conversation. Just to give a little bit of a refresher course. Last week, we were speaking about mental health and mental illness and the abuses of mental health and mental illness that people seem to use in order to get government or medical benefits for themselves. And I have with me once again, out of Baltimore, Maryland, psychotherapist, Ms. Beth Katz. Beth, how are you doing and how was your week?
Hi, Jay. How are you? My week has been great so far. I appreciate
that. Great. So let's just jump right into it, if you don't mind. Last week, I wanted to talk about, as I just said, the different abuses, let's just say, that people use when it comes to mental health and mental illness. I would like to start our conversation this week on talking about people that are able to gain disability from going and making a false claim of having a mental health issue in order to get those type of benefits. And, you know, anything that I talk about on my show, it's either something that I saw on television or heard on another radio show, and I do my own research and then I will talk about it, or it's something that I am kind of directly connected to. And in this case, this is something that I am directly connected to. We did speak about this briefly last week, but I do know of someone that is collecting disability because they have a supposed anxiety disorder, and they are collecting disability every month. However, as well as their disability claim or their disability payments that they get every month, they are also one of the top representatives of a multi-level marketing company. It's somewhere within the top five of a multi-level marketing company. And it kind of rubs me a little bit the wrong way, because when you deal with, if I'm sure everyone knows what a multi-level marketing company is, but it's basically sales. So you have to get out and you have to talk to people. You have to deal with people. That's really almost 90% of your job, is making connections, talking to people, dealing with people. I have tried doing multi-level marketing myself, and you know, the level of stress that a person can get from the job of multi-level marketing, you know, it's pretty high. So it would seem to me, if someone has the ability of being a top representative in a worldwide multi-level marketing company, it would seem to me it's kind of a contradiction, it's kind of a conflict of interest, if you will, to receive disability payments every month because your anxiety is so high that you are not able to work. But you can be a top-level, multi-level marketing representative. So if you don't mind, Beth, this is the first subject we'll talk about this evening. If you don't mind, can you just speak to how it's, and I hope that this is a fair question to ask you, but can you speak to how it's at all possible for someone to be at the top level of a multi-level marketing company, but yet cannot hold a, what they say, they cannot hold a regular job because their anxiety is too hard?
And it's interesting that you bring up about multi-level marketing because you know what I do for a living. I'm a psychotherapist and I'm in private practice. Mm-hmm. Well, part of, this was 5-10 years ago, I decided to try multi-level marketing in addition to working as a therapist. And I tried two different MLMs, and which is multi-level marketing. I tried two different types and found that each one, because the first one I tried was so stressful, and I said, maybe I'm in the wrong sales. Maybe I will try something in more of the beauty end, the beauty and makeup end. So I switched. Multi-level marketing, to me, was so stressful because you have to reach a certain level to get your car or to get your district manager or to get whatever the promotion was. And there was a lot of work that needed to be done. So I gave up my multi-level marketing part-time job and focused on my full-time job as a psychotherapist, which I actually found to be easier than working part-time in an MLM.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. Yes. I mean, and I say that's interesting because I have on the line a psychotherapist that is telling me and you, all the listeners, that multi-level marketing was so stressful for her, she had to stop doing it. But there are people out there that can, convince a psychiatrist, convince a psychotherapist, convince whoever they had to convince in order to get disability payments. Now, do you know, Beth, what the process is for someone to get disability through like anxiety or through mental health or mental illness, or is that outside of your ballpark?
It's not outside of my ballpark. I actually work with I work with people who are on medical assistance because of some type of disability. But usually the disability is something medical and they are coming to see me because of their disability. They're not seeing me to get disability. Over the past 25 years that I've been practicing, the amount of people who have come to me trying to get me to write them a letter to get disability, to get unemployment, and now the big thing is this therapy dog, support dog, emotional support dog, whatever you want to call it. It's the new craze. It's like, let's go see a therapist and let's live off of the government and let's take advantage of the mental health system and let's take advantage of the United States and not work and not do anything but collect money.
Do you know what the, like, let's say, okay, we'll just use me as an example. I don't want to work anymore, or I want to get a supplemental income. And I decide, you know what, I'm hearing about how people go to therapists and they can talk to them and they can possibly get put on disability. if that's something that I wanted to do, do you know how that process works in order for someone to be approved for getting a supplemental income as far as going to a therapist, trying to get the therapist to write a letter? Is it just, would it just be me coming to you and you saying, okay, yeah, this person has anxiety. Are there tests that are done? Do you have to see a medical doctor as well as a therapist or a psychotherapist?
Usually. So when you get a hold of whatever state, you know, let's say the state of California, you mm-hmm. have to fill out forms for disability. So you have to file for unemployment, or you have to file for disability, or whatever the case may be. Okay. And in order to get disability, they're going to, and I don't know how California works specifically, but I'll just say California, assuming it's similar to Maryland, they're okay. going to require letters, a letter from an MD, usually, which could be a psychiatrist or a primary care physician or a neurologist or whatever the situation may be. When it's something in the mental health field, so if someone is coming and saying, if someone's going to file disability because they have, let's say, bipolar disorder, or yes. because they have PTSD, or whatever the situation may be, the state of California, the state of Maryland, will want a letter from a doctor, an MD doctor, okay. with what medication you were on, how long you've been on the medication, how long this issue has been going on. Are they functioning? Are you functioning on a daily basis? How are you functioning on a daily basis? Is this condition temporary or is it permanent? If it's temporary and the person can go back to work, how long would you say, what is the time frame? In addition to seeing a psychiatrist or a neuropsychiatrist or whatever the case may be, they're going to want you to see, or I would think, I'm not sure with California, to see a mental health practitioner, which would be an LCSWC or an LCPC or a psychologist for counseling. And that's where I come in.
Okay. So I hope this is a fair question also. When you are filing for disability payments for PTSD or anxiety, is it more so the doctor just has to listen to what you're saying and trust what you're saying? Because I'm sure that, you know, in order to get disability, I'm sure they don't, like the disability people or the therapist or even the medical doctor, I'm sure that there is no representative that follows people around every day. So if I were to go in and I were to tell my doctor, hey, you know, I have a hard time talking to people and I break out into sweats and I get real, my heart starts racing and I get real nervous and I just can't do it. Is that how it usually goes? Because it's hard for me to understand what type of real tests can be done when you're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder or you're talking about an anxiety disorder that is keeping you from work. So is it more so the doctor just listens to what your symptoms are and just says, okay, that's what it is? Or you know how that whole process works?
Well, if someone's going to a doctor, so if someone's going to go see a psychiatrist to mm-hmm. say, I have PTSD and mm-hmm. I'm having nightmares, I'm having panic attacks, I'm having, you know, I'm sweating, I'm doing, you know, all these different, whatever the symptoms may be, mm-hmm. I need some medication. If it is a good doctor, if it is a doctor who follows the morals and values and the code of ethics, mm-hmm. he would say to you, okay, I hear what you're saying. I can recommend that you see a therapist to help you cope with this, because Jay, not every certain disorders do not require medication and only medication. 99%, maybe even 100%, I don't know, of mental health situations require therapy. You can't fix a problem by giving a pill. So, for an example, one of my patients is schizophrenic. Okay. And that person who is schizophrenic, she's paranoid schizophrenic, and she is really not able to leave her home because of the severity of her schizophrenia. So she is my only patient that I do a home visit with. She is on five different medications and has to be on those medications. But that psychiatrist is requiring that in order for her to receive that medication, she has to see a mental health practitioner for therapy twice a week. And she does. She sees me once a week and is in a group therapy for other schizophrenics once a week. So it's not going to just be going to a doctor and him giving medication. It's requiring a mental health practitioner. You need someone to be able to talk to and work through your problems, because you can work through problems on your own.
Mm-hmm. So would it be a fair statement to say, if I did not have PTSD, if I did not have an anxiety disorder, is it a fair statement to say, if I researched PTSD and if I researched anxiety disorders, I could educate myself enough to go in, say that I have these symptoms, and just make sure I, for a lack of better words, stayed in character the whole time I was seeing my medical doctor, my therapist, my psychotherapist? Is that a fair statement?
If you can stay in character, yes, I guess you can pull anything off. I mean, people can fool the system in a variety of ways. I work with people, multiple people, who suffer from PTSD. Mm-hmm. And these people who have PTSD have experienced some pretty significant trauma in their life. On that note, they are working on a daily basis. I have two particular patients who suffer from PTSD. One is a therapist like me, and the other one is a criminal attorney. So they are able to work, but they come in for therapy weekly. They also are on an anti-anxiety medication to help them, which also helps. One of my clients who suffers from PTSD received a type of therapy called EMDR, which is specifically for PTSD. I do not do that, but I know that there are a lot of people who do. So yes, if you are in character, sure, with your doctor and with your therapist on a weekly basis, yes, you can pull it off. It's done all the time, unfortunately.
Have you, as a psychotherapist there in Maryland, have you, oh, I hope I can ask this question. Have you ever dealt with anyone that you felt is trying to take advantage of the system? And if you have, what is the normal protocol? Because I mean, I would think it would be kind of hard to look at somebody and say, you know what? You don't have the problems that you say you have. So if you ran into somebody, or if you had someone come, and we kind of touched on this a little bit last week, but if you have someone that comes in and gives you a whole laundry list of problems, like the panic attacks, the nightmares, night terrors, whatever they want to tell you, what do you do as a psychotherapist if you think someone is not being completely honest with you?
Well, I had this situation about 2 weeks ago, and she texted me. In fact, I'm looking for that text, but I think that I mentioned it to you last week. Mm-hmm. She texted me and wanted me to write a letter for her school or something.
Yes.
The severe anxiety that she has, and she wants to be able to get out of a particular class, or she wants to take a break for the semester. And I said to her, I said, if you are suffering that much anxiety that you want me to write you a letter so that you can get out of whatever the case may be, I forgot right now, mm-hmm. why aren't you coming in to see me? And she says, well, I haven't had the time. I've been working. And I said, if you're able to work and mm-hmm. you're working a full-time job, which she did when I met, when I was treating her, if you're mm-hmm. working a full-time job and you're able to function in this job, why do you need to be taken out of class? Mm-hmm. Why do you, that's what I, and when I called her out on it, I never heard back from her.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. So my next question, and I think it's worth mentioning because I don't know if the practices are different, but do you have any knowledge of what the mental health policies and procedures are for the country of Canada? Because the particular person that I'm speaking to is Canadian. No, I take that back. She's not Canadian, but she lives in Canada. So is there that much, if you know, is there that much of a difference? You don't. Okay.
No. And that's the thing. I don't know what the different criteria are for countries such like Canada or Europe. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, that's the situation. The person who asked me about getting her a letter or writing her a letter, she's from here. She's from the United States. So I just wasn't going to do that. She saw me for a period of time. Yes, she was experiencing anxiety. Yes, she was on medication. But even back then, I did not think she needed to file for a short-term disability. There wasn't a need. And I wasn't going to jeopardize my career and take advantage of the system just so that she can miss a semester of school.
And none of this at all, trying to get an emotional service dog, trying to, or even succeeding in getting some type of disability. If a person is found out, do you know if there is any type of, are there any type of criminal charges that come? Or is it just if you've been found out after you got disability, the disability, they just cut you off and that's it?
I see that. I can't give a definitive on if, I don't know if we're taking any callers, but if there are any callers that can address that, I'd be curious to know if there's been anyone who has been caught. I'd like to know, but I haven't had that experience. All I know is that I particularly do not participate in writing a letter for someone to get disability or to get an emotional support dog or whatever the situation may be.
If there are any listeners that are listening to this, this just might be one of the slipperiest slopes that I have been down, but I'm going to go down it anyway. If there is someone out there that feels as though they know a family member or they know a close acquaintance to them, and they believe that this person is abusing the system, is there anything that you know of in place to be able to report such a situation, or is that really difficult as well, in your opinion?
Excuse me for that. Are you asking me if it's difficult, or are you just asking that for the caller?
No, I'm asking you.
If I think it's Okay, can you repeat that question? Because I thought you were asking that for the caller.
No. So let's say, how can I do this? Let's say I have a friend.
Okay.
And I know this friend is 100% normal.
Yes.
But they are constantly always bragging about how they're getting disability payments. Or okay. If I have a friend that is at a gathering and somebody is talking about, you know what, I'm really having a hard time paying my bills. I really need to try and figure out what other kind of a job I can get. If there's someone that's at that gathering and they say, oh, you know what? All you have to do is you can go and talk to my therapist, but just make sure when you go in there, you say this, you say that, you say the other, and they'll get you on disability. If I were to hear something like that, or if somebody else that's at the gathering would hear a conversation like that go on, other than being accused of being a snitch or a whistleblower or what have you, is there anywhere that I would be able to go to report this? Or is it just a situation where, you know, they beat the system, so, you know, just pat them on the back and say, well, you did it?
Okay, well, in that situation, if you don't mind me using an example, there is a situation or at least a recent situation, because it's happened to me, where I have been treating friends or I've been treating family members. Mm-hmm. So in one particular situation, I was seeing, I actually still see her, seeing a woman who was coming to me for her anxiety and actually for her PTSD. So she came to me and I was seeing her once or twice a week. I'm now seeing her every other week. And there was a lot of work and progress being done with her. She complained to me about a friend that she had who was suffering from severe anxiety and the effects that it was doing to her. And she asked me if I would be okay seeing her friend. I said, yes, you can bring her in. Well, this friend came in to see me and she presented with the anxiety and I tried to help her. But what I did not know was that she was not telling me, she was not disclosing certain pieces of information that I had been hearing from my original client, who is her friend. And that was affecting my treatment of the friend, the second client. So I said to her, my original client, I'll call her Jane. So I said to Jane, or Jane said to me, I just want you to know that Claire has been telling you XYZ, but that is not the case. Last night, ABC happened. And I said to her, I said, okay, Jane, this is definitely going to affect it. Would you feel comfortable if I addressed this with Claire? And she said, that would be great. Several days later, Claire came into my office and I said, I need to discuss an issue with you. And Jane is very concerned about you, and this is the reason why. Well, as soon as she found out that I knew, that's when everything happened. The walls came down, and that's when treatment really began. So, yes, to your question, that does happen where people do, where people have come to me saying, hey, listen, you're being lied to. People are not telling you something, and you need to know the truth. So when I'm presented with a situation like that, I don't necessarily turn them in as I do. I address it with the client. And then if that client responds in a certain way, great, we can move forward. If the client does not react, which has not been my, which has not been something that I have experienced. Mm-hmm. I guess on a moral level and on an ethical level, yes, I would have to report it.
And when you say reported, who do you, are you allowed to tell me and my listeners who you report it to?
I guess what I would do is I would call the state of Maryland, or I would call up the, in this case, it would be the state of Maryland. I would call the state of Maryland, say, you know, this is Beth Katz. I'm a psychotherapist. I am currently treating such and such person. And I think you need to reevaluate her case.
Okay. Let me just throw a little something in because, you know, so when I asked you that question, I said, I'm not talking about being a snitch. I'm not talking about being a whistleblower. There are going to be some people that hear this particular episode of my show. And they are going to say that you're doing exactly that. You're being a snitch or you're being a whistleblower. But I just really want my listeners to understand. As I said last week, as I have said in every post that I have done about last week's show and this week's show, mental health is a very serious situation. It's not something to be played with.
Exactly.
So I would hope that if anyone knows of someone that is, for a lack of better words, beating the system, I hope you would say something about it. Because in my opinion, and I don't have any numbers, I don't have any stats on this, but for every person that fakes a situation, there has to be at least one or two people that are having a real situation go on that for whatever reason cannot get help, cannot receive the type of help that they need. So if anyone wants to see someone taking advantage of the mental health and the mental health care industry, if you can see that as being, well, they're not really hurting anybody, no harm, no foul, you're absolutely wrong. And I would encourage anyone that knows of a person that is doing such a thing to either sit down with that person and, you know, try and get them straight. And if that doesn't work, you know, just take whatever measures you need to take. But there is no such thing as no harm, no foul in a situation like this. There is no such thing as, well, just leave them alone, let them do what they're doing. It's a come up for them. I don't see it that way. I really don't, because me personally, I know people that suffer. I know someone here in the state of California that is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, but have been denied disability. I think she's been denied disability twice. And I also even think that she has to wait a certain amount of time before she applies again.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is a real thing, and this is a real issue. So I am really honestly hoping that all of my listeners will keep that in perspective when I talk about telling someone of a higher level, or, you know, telling in a person of some level of being official, that this absolutely is going on, because at the end of the day, it's just not a right situation. Another question that I have for you,
well,
Beth,
is... I don't mean, excuse me for a moment, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's something sure. What you just said. You okay. mentioned, and I don't want your callers to think this or to feel that they are, as far as being a snitch. Mm-hmm. The short term may not look so good. You may have your friend or your partner or whatever be upset with you, but in the long term, it's what is best. And as far as what I would do, as far as me being a snitch or maybe coming across as a snitch, I never do it without the person knowing. So for an example, if this person said to me, no, you know what? Okay, that's fine, but I'm not going to contact XYZ. I'm not going to change XYZ. Then I say to them, in my, it is my responsibility then to contact this person or this department, and I need to report you. So I just want you to understand that this is what's happening. So when you mention how it's getting harder for people to get disability, or it's getting harder for people to get certain benefits because of mental health situations, it's because of the people who are abusing it.
Can you please say that again? Can you please say that again?
It's not, it's because it's not, it's getting harder for people to get disability. It's getting harder for people to get benefits because of the abuse that's happening in the mental health system. So if this wasn't happening, it wouldn't be so hard.
Okay. Well, then that right there, as I said last week, you know, we had a caller last week and the call did go a little long, but that telephone call that was on last week's show, and if you all didn't hear last week's show, I definitely invite you to go to bbsradio.com/onthelevel, go through the archives. That telephone call last week validated the whole conversation Beth and I had. That statement that Beth just made right now validates this whole conversation that we are having today. It is, did the mental health industry and getting disability is becoming more difficult because of the people that are abusing the system. And that is why I am doing this show. I almost feel like I have to justify why I'm doing this show. And, you know, that's pretty sad that I have to justify why I am actually doing this show. But I guarantee you, there's more than one person that is going to hear this show and that is probably secretly or quietly saying to themselves, thank you very much for what you just said. So I'll say it out loud. Thank you very much for what you just said. I really honestly mean that. So not necessarily to switch gears, but this is another type of abuse. I swear people are going to think that I hang out with some of the craziest people. And all I'll say is, listen, I live in California. I live in Hollywood. Hollywood isn't called Holly Weird for no reason at all. So
we have some crazy ones here too.
these are real situations that I am dealing with. But before I bring up the next topic I want to speak about, Beth, can you tell my listeners what it means to be socioaffected?
To be socioaffected. Okay.
Socioaffective, yes.
Socioaffective.
Schizoaffective.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I have not necessarily heard that particular.
I'm sorry. That was my mess up. Schizoaffective. What exactly does that mean?
Well, there's a lot of people are afraid with, or afraid of, or know about schizophrenia. So. Yes. Schizoaffective is more, it's schizoaffective disorder, which is more of, I don't know, it's looked as to more of a personality disorder. So with schizoaffective, it is, you know, it has to do with psychosis. So I can give you, I guess, the layman's terms or the official diagnosis, which is when someone has both schizophrenia and a mood disorder. For an example, the person I see who has paranoid schizophrenia, she also has bipolar. So she's diagnosed with both paranoid schizophrenia and bipolar. So it's basically a combination of both. It's the abnormal thought processes like the psychosis and the mood disorder.
Okay. So now getting to my example.
Okay.
I know someone that is schizoaffective. Okay. And they are taking, I don't really know what psych meds they're taking, but I definitely know that they are taking them. I'll tell you the situation. There was someone that I was involved with, and we were involved for, I think it was like 6 or 7 months or so. And throughout that time, every night that I was with this person before bed, they would take some pills and they would take them with a vodka soda. And, you know, I'm thinking that these are just vitamins, or you will ask what I was thinking. They were just vitamins, because in my mind, I'm thinking anybody that has to take any type of psych meds fully understands that they cannot take those psych meds and wash them down with a vodka soda. So it was one night, a few months into us knowing each other, I actually asked, what are those vitamins that you're taking? And the answer was, these aren't vitamins. This is my medication. Okay, red flag everywhere. I didn't even need to know what they, I mean, I found out at a later date what they were, but I mean, that they were actually psych meds. I just don't remember the name of them because this is going on a couple of years ago. But I mean, red flags are going all around, and I'm like thinking to myself, and then I said to her, I have never known any type of medication that you can take with a vodka soda. And she said, well, that's just, you know, I take this medication because my doctors say I have to, and I use the vodka soda because it helps me sleep. Okay, so there was more than one time when I woke up, it actually happened twice. And after it happened the second time, I'm not a punk and I'm not a spineless guy, but I actually feared for my life. The second time it happened, I was like, okay, I'm done. I woke up at night and this person was just sitting over me, staring at me. And anybody that just wakes up and sees somebody just sitting over them, staring at them, you know, you're going to have you're going to have a what the fuck moment. I'm excuse my language, but that's what you're going to have. And the second time that it happened, I finally said, what are you doing? And this person was talking, when I say talking gibberish, I don't mean, okay, so the person is from a different country. They speak very fluent and clear English, but at times they do, if they're speaking to a family member that's back home or they're speaking to someone from their native country, they're speaking in that language. So I've heard the language that they speak in. This isn't what this person was doing. What it was, she thought that she was talking and she thought that she was making sense. And again, when I say she was speaking gibberish, she was speaking straight baby talk type gibberish. So because I knew, and maybe this is a bit prejudicial, I don't know. But because I knew that particular night before bed, when she took her medication, before actually going to bed, there were 3 vodka sodas that were consumed. So to me, it was, in my mind, I'm thinking the problem is the medication is mixing with the alcohol.
Which so you do not do.
I was just about to ask you, in your professional opinion, can you please tell my listeners why you don't do it and what the consequences of continuing to do that would be? Being taking psych medications. I mean, I could open it up to say any medication, but you're a psychotherapist, so we'll just hone in on the psych meds. Can you just tell my listeners why that is so bad to do?
But you also have to remember that I'm not a doctor. So to give you like the actual medical reasonings for it, I can't give you as far as, you know, medical terms. Mm-hmm. But one thing is that it says it on every piece of alcohol, especially with an antidepressant, mm-hmm. or an antipsychotic, because mm-hmm. if your ex-partner, if she was taking medications before bed, which is probably the case, she was most likely taking a antipsychotic, a mood stabilizer, and or an antidepressant. So, you know, alcohol does the complete opposite. It is not an antidepressant. It might make you feel good or calm you down on a very short-term basis, mm-hmm. but on a long-term basis, like the next day, I guess just to say that when that's the long-term, you're going to feel worse than you did before, because you're most likely going to be doing something on the alcohol, because the alcohol knocks everything out. So the alcohol or the drugs, you know, the marijuana or whatever it is that you're taking, it's going to have a rebound effect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your antipsychotics, your antidepressants are working on a certain part of your brain, and the marijuana, the alcohol, whatever it may be, is working on a different part of your brain. You put those two together and you have usually some type of catastrophe. And you wake up the next morning and you're saying, I can't believe I did what I did. And then it brings you into a state of, usually, just from my experience of what I've seen, it brings you into a deeper state of depression. So, you know, when I've had patients who have some type of psychosis going mm-hmm. on, some type of mood disorder, some type of anxiety disorder, or a combination of all three, which mm-hmm. gives you your schizoaffective. When I have had that, sometimes people will get off the medication because they're feeling so good about things. Well, they're feeling so good because they're off the medication, because they were taking the medication.
Yes, ma'am.
If you were taking the medication, it's working because, and you're feeling better. You know, that's why you're feeling better. You're on, if you're schizoaffective and you're having, you know, the dysfunctional thinking and the psychotic thinking, that's something chemical. You need a medication to help you with that. So to get off of it, you're going to be worse than you were before. So I've seen people bash in car windows. I've seen people do things that, I'm sure you live in Hollywood, so you've seen the same things. Some crazy, crazy things when they are either off the medication or they are drinking or using drugs, drinking or using drugs while on medication.
And you brought something up that I would like to, I mean, not necessarily touch on, but have a bit of a conversation about. What do you have to say to the listeners that I have that either they're doing it or they know someone that is doing what is called self-medicating? I don't want to take these pills because, you know, it's if anybody finds out that I'm taking these pills, it's embarrassing or it's humiliating. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, when I get home from work, you know, I'll just deal with work. And as long as I know I've got my weed at home, I can just go home, smoke a joint, and everything will be okay. Or I can go home, smoke a joint, have a drink, and I'll be okay. Why is that not okay?
Why is that not okay to be taking alcohol, to be drinking alcohol when you're taking a medication?
No, ma'am. Why is it not okay to stop taking your medication and just start self-medicating yourself with marijuana and alcohol?
Because it's not working on the same types of, it's not working on the same type of, same parts of your brain. That's something that's more for a psychiatrist than I can really answer. I can't give you those answers as well as I can with more something of the therapeutic nature. All I know okay. is that it's in my experience that if you have a certain disorder or certain, you know, mood disorders, especially if you're having a, especially if you have like bipolar or ADD yes. or schizophrenia, or you have something that is chemical in nature and you have to be on a medication, you cannot be off that medication. I think this is based on what our, the caller from last week, she yes. mentioned how she was is bipolar and she stopped taking her medication because she didn't like how it felt. So mm-hmm. I think you remember how that went, but yes. you do not yes. do it and you do not self-medicate because that is temporary. The medication that you are on, prescribed by your physician, prescribed by your psychiatrist, is going to help you long-term. The drug, marijuana, alcohol, whatever it may be, that is only short-term.
So I'm one of your clients. And you, I come in to see you, and you ask me, you say, Jay Lewis, how is it going taking your medication? Well, Beth, you know, yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that. I don't like the way that medication makes me feel. So my brother's girlfriend's sister's husband's daughter told me that, you know, if I just smoke a joint and I just have a couple of drinks, because that's what she does, you know, she has the same problem that I do, Beth. So what's wrong with her doing that? So I just started doing that as well. And to be honest with you, it kind of makes me feel a lot better. What are you going to say to me?
Well, when it's situations like that, no one knows what goes on behind closed doors. So mm-hmm. this person may be looking all wonderful and great and everything's, you know, everything is perfect. So, mm-hmm. You know, everything is all wonderful and great. And but you don't know what happens when you're not around me. So this person may be saying to you or coming across as everything is wonderful, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm.
If I came into your office and I continue to say, well, yeah, you know, I hear what you're saying, Beth, but I just don't want to take that medication. Is that type of person a person that could be reported to anyone anywhere? Because it would seem to me, if you're supposed to be on some type of mood stabilizer, if you're supposed to be on some type of psych med that's going to help whatever your problem is, whether it's schizophrenia or what have you, it would seem to me there is going to be a point break where that person is going to not only be a danger to themselves, but to other people. So if you had a client that continuously told you week after week, I'm not taking my medication, this is what I'm doing, is there anywhere or anyone for you to report that person to?
Is there anyone for me to report them to? I can contact their doctor. So I can contact their doctor and say to the doctor, this is what is happening with your patient. Because usually when I'm seeing someone and they're on medication, I have contact with, if they're on medication, it's usually a psychiatrist. I recommend them seeing a psychiatrist. So I will contact the doctor, the prescribing physician, and saying, I just want you to know that our mutual client is not taking their medication.
Okay. So because we had a conversation before and I do know that you have to go, I will just do the same thing I did last week. First of all, again, thank you very much. You were very informative once again this week. For some reason, it seems like this week went by a whole lot quicker than last week. But do you have any, before I give my ending commentary, do you have any parting words for my listeners?
All I can say is please don't abuse the system. The system is here to help you. If you are honest and you are straight forth with everything, it can help you. I promise you it can help you.
Well, I absolutely thank you, Beth, for being here with me once again this week. And to end the call, you know, I will say this. In last week's call and in this, or excuse me, in last week's show and in this week's show, you know, I did speak about people that I know personally. There was no animosity involved. There is no, oh, I'm going to get you back. This is a revenge type thing. Number one, I didn't mention anybody's name. Fortunately, maybe some people that follow my social media or that know me personally might know who I'm speaking of, but I'm not trying to embarrass anybody. I'm not trying to humiliate anybody. I wouldn't care if this would be, if the people that I was speaking about, I wouldn't care if I knew them personally or not. I am exposing situations that are wrong that should not happen. And I will go back because I've said this in more than one of my shows. My very first show, I explained. My show is called On the Level because there's a bunch of bullshit going on that people either know about and are turning their head to, or they know about and just don't know what to do about it. And I've said it more than once in this show and in last week's show. Mental health and mental illness are very serious situations. You don't play with them. You don't self-medicate yourself. You're not a doctor. You're not a psychiatrist. You're not a therapist. You're not a psychotherapist. So the fact that there are people out there that feel like self-medicating is right, at some point, you're going to do something that you will most definitely regret. And then you might end up sitting in a prison cell saying to yourself day after day for years on end, if I would have only stayed on my medication. There could be somebody's family who has to deal with your wrath because you hit your point break and they find out that you were off your medication. You're going to force somebody's family to think, my loved one would still be here if that person would have stayed on their medication or if somebody would have said something about it. So I'm only saying this because I really want people to understand these two shows over these last 2 weeks were done because I recognize this as being a real problem, not because people that I know are engaging in such behavior. At the end of the day, quite frankly, and if I offend you by saying this to anybody listening, I'm sorry, but I could care less that these are people that I know. I only care about getting this information out and having an industry professional back up some of the things that I said and corrected me on others. So that's why, as I said last week, I was going to do this show 3 weeks ago. But I didn't have that industry professional. And I guarantee you, if I did not have an industry professional on this show speaking to me and speaking to the points that I was making and correcting me on the points that she corrected me on, the strength would not be there that I believe last week's show from all of the messages that I got of thanks would be there. And I'm kind of assuming I'm going to get more this week. If you disagree with what I say, I want to hear from you too. I don't just want to hear the good emails. I don't want to just read the good emails, the good messages through social media. If you disagree with me and with what I said, or you disagree with something that Beth said, let's have a texting conversation about it. I'm not going to do another show on it, but let's have a texting conversation about it. But I really just want to get it out to people. The situations and the things that I talk about on my show, they're all real things. They are all real topics. They are all real situations that real human beings are living through. I thank you all for joining me this week. We're going to go a little lighter over the next few weeks. I've got this month, I've got a former WWE superstar that's going to come on and talk to us. I'll just talk about it when it comes up. But we're going to get a little lighter. You know, we did kind of start the the year out a little, you know, a little dark. But hey, this is life. This is absolute life. Next week, I am hoping to have a senator on and have a conversation with the senator. So, okay, maybe next week will be my last dark week. But starting January 31st, I can guarantee you my shows will get a little lighter. I hope you all join me. I thank you for joining me on this one. Have a great week. Stay safe. We're out.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Ma'am.
Thank you.
Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.